Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is painter and graphic artist Mark Rubin. Rubin is a self-taught artist who also studied under renowned painter Thomas Buchner. His most recent solo shows appeared at the Broadmoor Gallery in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and the Artist Gallery in Chesterton, Maryland. His work has also been shown in Philadelphia and Scranton, Pennsylvania. A new gallery featuring his solo work will open soon in Elmira, New York. Rubin has served on the Executive Board of Directors for the Arnett Art Museum in Elmira, New York, and the Arts Council of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. And welcome.
Thank you so much, Tish. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, you too. Now, the work statement that you sent me, you say you pull things from the debris of the world to, right. to concentrate on. Tell us why. What is that?
I like things that are old. I like things that have history. I like things that kind of tell me a story at a glance. And I do a lot of taxidermy painting, and I've been doing a lot of landscapes lately, but the taxidermy, I feel they deserve more life, so I try to paint them again and give them more life and add story to them. And I mean, it's simple. We went to reptile land with our grandkids, and I just saw this very well-done replica of a frog. And I said, that could be a painting. Well, my last painting was the frog.
And it's gorgeous. I've seen it.
Thank you. With this little petal, and the title is, I Must Be a Flower.
Wow. That's interesting because you seem to be attracted to objects that most people don't even notice.
Yeah.
And so you bring them to life in many ways.
Thank you.
That's quite a trick, Mark.
Thank you.
Now, you've been influenced by Dutch painters, especially Rembrandt. What is it about that tradition that...
It's the lighting, that incredible light that they do. And Vermeer is another one of my favorites. Mm. And Caravaggio, I mean, he does these little moments, these little pools, part of the fun is seeing that pool of light from the beginning and going, when can I do that? You kind of work your way to that moment, because one of the last things you do is those highlights. And I work in layers, so it's like you build it, but at the last layer, you get to put the little magical boom to it, and that's part of the excitement. And it also, you know, I paint a lot of things out of dark, but not dark, dark backgrounds. It's, again, to bring them into the light, so it's out of the darkness, into the light, and let them tell a story.
Yeah.
I have a story in my own mind. I try to give a hint to that in the titles that I use, but it really comes down to the viewer. When the viewer walks in front of it, they may see something absolutely different that relates to their life, their own history, a dream or a vision. And that's kind of the fun thing. Someone says, what's the meaning behind this? I ask, what do you see first before I answer my question?
What is the meaning behind it?
Yeah, like with the meaning behind the painting. So if someone goes up to me and says, well, why did you paint this? And what's the story here? It's like, what's the story? What does it tell you first before I give you that answer?
Yeah, I love the Dutch artists, too. It does feel like they illuminate their story in that special way.
Yeah. Rembrandt really, I don't know, because he couldn't see and the light was horrible, but whatever it was, it really works.
It might have been, but how do you think that dark kind of work translates in today's almost like pop culture everywhere?
I think it's a matter of one's like and taste, because it's a historic kind of a look. And a lot of the contemporary artists are using very, very bright colors, painting super large, hyper-realistic. And I'm not attracted to that. I like to have something that leaves a little bit to the imagination, let the eye connect the colors and the values and so forth, and see the best they can with adding their own mind to it, as opposed to here's hyper-realistic, here's a photograph.
Yeah, you do leave a lot to the imagination that way, and people have to explore. You can't just look at it really quick.
And I try to evoke emotion. I mean, my core is emotion, for the good and the bad of that sometimes. But I'm an aesthetic, and I see everything from my emotion, and you know, the intellect certainly kicks it around and so forth, but it really has to hit me in a visceral way.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you also mainly do still lives, or you do a lot of still lives.
Yes.
To tell us how you got attracted to that, and how do you set up
the atmosphere? So the way I set up,
the way
it sets up is I'll find that one object that gives me that little spark of inspiration, and I'll set that on my board, and then I'll light it. I used to use 100% available natural light, but now I tend to use color-balanced lights, but I control them a little bit more. And so I'll set the light on that, and I'll just stare at it for a while. And then I'll say, okay, what story is this really telling? What was the excitement about it? So I'd found this little chipmunk on I buy a lot of stuff from eBay.
I'll bet.
That's where I get all my little creatures for all over the world. I mean, one of them, I have a giant raven, and it's like 2.5 feet long. I got that from Lithuania, and it's just so cool. I painted that a couple of different times. So I'll set that up, and then like this little chipmunk that I just painted, a neighbor said, I'd like to do a painting for my mother. She's going to be 90. And I said, she's a real sweet lady. We live down near the Chemung River in this beautiful area where you can go for walks. And they had this pot that she's had for most of her life. It was just looks like Egyptian. So she said, we can do something around that. So I said, all right, I'll bring the little chipmunk into this and see what I can do with that. So then I move things around and play with it, and I put some cloth in it to kind of hide the wooden base that it's on, so it looks very natural in there. And I painted it, and they love it. It's called Friendly Neighbor.
Wow.
And
did she love it?
She went absolutely crazy over it. I was there when they gave it to her and presented
wow.
it to her.
God, that must be so gratifying to you.
Those are the moments, you know. It's like I paint because I love to paint, and I can't see myself doing anything else. But when someone really has that kind of emotional reaction to something I've done, it's like they touched where I am coming from. You know, there might be a different pathway to it, but they're touching that sensitivity and that feeling. And if I can do that, I feel I've satisfied the universe in some way.
Does it have to come first from you, though? I mean, do you know most of the time when you're creating something that it will touch people? Or do you discard things saying, this isn't working?
I don't think about the people. I think about what I'm doing and how I'm feeling and try to paint that feeling into it. And, I mean, there's such a joy to painting. And the process itself is so rewarding. And on a good day, I've painted something that I like. On a bad day, it was a good session. I enjoyed painting, but it's a lousy painting, you know. But it's still all a process. And I compare it to my brother who plays golf. And he plays golf, and sometimes he plays really well. But he still loves the game, whether he does a good job of playing golf or not. So it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah. To tell us, you said you have begun steering clear of natural light for some of your paintings.
Part of it was I moved from one home to another, and this particular space I'm using for a studio didn't have great natural light. So I felt that first I started bumping the natural light. And then it was like, I'm a control freak, so it gives me a little more opportunity to control everything about it. I can color balance the light so it looks very natural, so it doesn't look like artificial yellow light. I can make it warmer or cooler, whatever. Uh-huh. LED lights, you can really almost type in what you want the light to be.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
the distance from it and so forth. And I just started falling in love with one more level of control. Natural light is great, but it depends on the day it's going on outside, and you have a certain angle to your window, which controls everything about it. And this way I can control the angle, so I'm controlling the direction of light, how bright it is, how warm it is, how cool it is. But it's only one light source. I don't do multiple light sources. It's always just one light source.
That's amazing to me, because when I think of the Dutch painters, which you absolutely admire, I don't think of artificial light, of course.
No, they used natural, but they didn't have much.
Yes. So oil lamps, have you ever tried using that kind of?
No, I'm not that adventurous.
I would think that would
be cool.
Be interesting. Now, I want to quote what you said. You have said, when I can't paint, it feels like not being able to take a full breath.
Right.
Talk to me about that. That is fascinating.
Well, it's what I compare it to is, and I had to write something for a show I was in at the Arnie Art Museum. It was called Three Americans. And what is it like to paint? And I said, hold your breath. Hold it longer. Now take that deep cleansing breath that just makes you feel alive and you feel wonderful, like standing on a mountain, feeling the warm wind blowing in your face.
Yeah.
That's what painting is for me. It's that beautiful, life-filled beauty.
As you're creating it, though, right? And is that sustained through the whole creation?
Yeah, it does. I mean, of course, I hit brick walls and start swearing and that kind of stuff.
Oh, we don't need to hear about that. Really?
But it sustains. It definitely sustains.
Do you settle into a meditative state when you're doing this? Because your paintings are so intricate, it seems.
Thank you. It is. I'll start. I'm aware of the first stroke, and then time just runs away. I tend to sit in anywhere from 2.5 to 4 hour sessions, depending on the light, how awake I am, if I'm what layer I'm in the painting. Sometimes you have to stop at a certain point, so you wait for the dry to put a. I put this layer of liquid over top of it between each layer, which helps increase the intensity of light and evens the paint when you go for your next session and so forth.
Wow! Did you sit on your paintings for a while before you show them publicly?
When I feel that they're finished, and that, you know, that's a very broad statement when you say finished, because it's going to be finished at multiple levels depending on the artist. You know, if you're a hyper-realist, then my work is probably half done. But I like to have strokes show and the feeling of the paint, so you know it's a painting. I want people to know it's a painting. So.
How much time do you actually have to spend to create what you consider a perfect painting? Do you discard and go through tons of materials and days of thinking?
It kind of comes in sessions. And like the frog, I knew I wanted to paint that frog. And I set him on this blue background that kind of looked like water, but it was still just a blue cloth. And I knew I wanted to put something in the painting with it. And my wife Penny said, why don't you put a little flower in there? I said, well, maybe. I'll think about it. And then I paint along the river. So I went walking along the river, and there's a lot of geese. They leave a lot of tracks. They leave a lot of mess. But there was this little, it wasn't like the flying feather. It was just the warm part that goes next to the body. It was this soft little thing. And I carried it. So I walked like a mile and a half to go painting, uh-huh. Brought it back. A friend of mine walked up to me, so I set it in my little cart. And then it blew away. So then it left. Then it was end up being the little flower that Penny thought of in the first place. Which, you know,
wow, should have painted it blowing away.
Well, you know, I paint everything from life, not from photographs. So to do that, I have to suspend it in some way to make it look like it was. And I've done things like that where I suspend things in space to look like it's in movement.
If you're just joining us, my guest is painter and graphic artist Mark Rubin. Now, I want to talk about this new segue you have headed into, doodles. Mm-hmm. I was so surprised to see this work suddenly appear. Tell us where that came from.
Well, it starts from a dark place. It starts from my daughter died a few years ago, and she was very young and horrible, you can imagine. And I don't want to go down that path.
But
Penny bought me an iPad at that point and a stylist. And I just started just filling my time to occupy my brain, like the meditative thing we just got through talking about. So it just kind of took me away. And I painted a lot of the darkness that I was feeling as a result of the loss of my daughter, Jen. And over time, I started doing things that were more fun, trying to work my way out of the dark spot and playful things and light things. And then politics kind of oozed into the world.
Yeah, I've noticed that. And whimsical to absolutely frightening.
Yes. So, and it started off trying to be light and whimsical and just let the drawing speak for itself. And the more I did them, the more I started putting a word or two with them. And it's evolved for me that, one, I love to do it. So I love it. Drawing is like the first thing, and then the message is second. But now the message is becoming really, really important, and I have this ability to draw these thoughts. Although when I started, not necessarily know where I'm going. I know that I'm going to draw something, and then something maybe about, I think, whatever the president's name is now. I'm not sure who he is.
We don't need to say his name.
Right. His face comes forward, or his figure comes forward, and then whatever's going on in time right currently. And I try to produce them pretty quickly so that, you know, what's happening in the news happens on my drawings that I post on Facebook and Instagram. And formerly I posted them on Twitter, but Twitter recently suspended me, and I'm not totally sure why. And if anybody out there has a way of getting me back on it, I'd be totally appreciative.
Yes, yes. You know, the doodles seem to me like you're talking more directly to people. It's more accessible for people. And the other work is much deeper and probably time-consuming and more thought put into it. Right. Were you trying to just become more
I'm trying to talk to people because I feel that as an artist, I have a responsibility. Once, you know, I kind of grew into a sense of responsibility, that I have a responsibility to the nation, to the world, to myself, that I feel like, you know, what can I do to make a difference in all this? I'm not a verbal guy. I'm a visual guy. So how can I make an expression and get people to respond? And I get a lot of responses. I've I had a lot of people who are really negative about what I have to say, and other people really, really supportive. But to me, it all it really matters is there's a dialogue that's going on.
Yeah,
and there's
yeah.
an awareness going on. And if you don't agree with my statement, wonderful. But at least we're talking about it.
Yeah.
You're responding to it. And other people tend to respond to it. And until whatever normal next normal is, until I feel that I can go back to not have to think about politics and what's going on in our nation and globe every single day, I'm not sure where it'll lead, but hopefully it'll lead into a more fun.
You know, I have had quite a few artists say that they don't go into politics because they feel like they're manipulating people.
Mm-hmm.
To see a certain thing from their work. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think about that?
I think that, you know, what's your voice? I mean, how do you speak? How do you communicate? My strongest communication is visual. Every note in high school, every note in college, every note in a meeting, there's a drawing along with it. You know, so I think that way, and I make little boxes as opposed to long notes and connect things that way. So, you know, it's part of the way I communicate is visually. And I'm more verbal now than I used to be because I'm having to respond to things. And talk about my belief, and I just really, as much negativity that comes out of it, I think that's good, because at least they're talking, and maybe we can find a place where we can all come to some level of appreciation of the two different opinions, and maybe something will come out of it.
And I love the way the bottom line is art always translates something into something beautiful or something thoughtful, instead of just ranting,
right.
You know.
And with the drawings, a lot of political cartoonists are very, very simple. A line here, and here's the story. These are rendered. I mean, they take an hour, sometimes 2 hours. Sometimes they work on them over days, depending how the thought is being built. But if you look close, there's tons of cross-hatching. And I think it's part of the painter side of me coming out as well, where I like form, I like volume, I like weight, I like light. So if you look at my drawings, you'll see all those same kind of aspects and elements coming to life, although it's with line. And I try to stay... I know it's a digital world, and I draw these in and on my iPad, but I try to stay true to colored pencil. And it's, you know, it's a 6B pencil with different colors on a very soft texture, like if it was a piece of paper. But I don't use, like, smear this or, you know, Photoshop this into something different. It's all as analog as I can keep it, but still use the medium of digital to produce.
Yeah, I was wondering what kind of material you used.
Yeah.
It's a colored pencil. It almost old-fashioned.
Yeah, yeah.
And
they're really interesting because you can have them, again, the beauty of the digital, you can have them at... I draw them like 24 inches at 600 dots per inch. So they blow up to 24-inch squares, even though I'm drawing on a little iPad. I was on a mini iPad. Now I'm on a regular iPad. And all that freedom of more room on the iPad, it's like,
because I was drawing so small. So the political work is going to continue, it sounds like. Are you going to show it? Yeah, with your art.
Well, at the new gallery that we're just opening, which is on, if I can say, 421 West Church Street in Elmira, is called Gallery 421. There'll be paintings as well as the drawings, and there'll be some political. But I also want people who have different political feelings to feel like that they can't come into that room because they're being offended in some way.
Yeah,
so it'll be a mix
yeah.
of some. This is, I call them fun ones and political ones. There'll be a lot of fun ones in there.
And are you going to just do solo shows, or are you going to invite other artists in? What do you think?
I'm not sure how that's going to develop. If I do, there'll be a few who I'm... Denny Smith's been a friend of mine for forever, and his work is like complete opposite of what I do. He's abstract, expressionistic, but I love his stuff and I love him. So bringing someone like that into it at some point in time, but right now there's not the space for that, and it's really to say, you know, here's my work, come take a look. We're going to be open, you know, from 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock weekdays, and by appointment if you want to see stuff. And, you know, I post everything on Instagram and Facebook, so you can see the work if you want to see it close up.
God, that's amazing. Has that changed your vision of your work by having a space of your own like this?
No. It's exciting, and it's a big adventure that we're taking to see. I mean, the graphic design world has changed so much over the years. I mean, I came out of the print world, and I love print, love doing magazines. I did magazines for Cornell University and publications throughout the college and so forth. And I still love print, like doing posters and so forth. But, you know, the digital and web is the way it goes. I mean, how many magazines and how many newspapers do you read physically? Most people read them online anymore.
Yeah, they do.
It's not as much joy because it's a lot of a tech, and I'm an aesthetic. So to do all that tech, like doing, we design websites. My design firm does, but I have a webmaster who does that, and I do the skin, and he does the the back end and the brains of everything to make it look right, and it works. But I'm such a control freak. I like controlling every single molecule of a page that's printed. And on the web, it depends on the screen you have. It depends on what kind of computer you have. If it's on a smartphone or whatever, everything changes according to the device you're looking at. So to have, to say, this is what I designed, it's close.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you never use live models? Because I was thinking your influence of loving the Dutch work. There's so many live models.
Actually, I teach at 171 Cedar and Corning.
I was going to bring that
and
up.
And I teach still life every, it's a 7-session work class, and we paint one painting over 7 weeks. And typically it's still life, but in the summer, and I'm trying to build a second one, we do a live model. We just got through painting a live model. Last night was the last evening of it. And It's so much fun, and it's such a challenge to paint the human figure.
Oh, I'll bet.
I mean, they breathe, they twitch, they scratch their noses, and this particular model was fantastic. I mean, she was just extraordinary.
But you don't render live models in most of your work. Is there a reason for that? Because of the control thing?
Yeah, because I want to paint from life. I mean, if I have to do a portrait of someone, or not have to, I enjoy doing portraits, I enjoy doing commissions, I'll have them sit, I'll do a drawing, then I'll take photographs, and I'll combine them, then have them come back at a certain point and send some more, sit again to finish the light. Because the depth and volume, I mean, you're taking a three-dimensional object, and you're putting on a two-dimensional plane.
Yeah.
If you have a two-dimensional plane to start with, a lot of the depth, the volume, the depth of field, you always can tell when someone paints from a photograph because something's out of focus because the camera's out of focus. And when the artist does it, you can focus on any different part of it so it can all be in focus, or you control it by your own thoughts whether you want it in focus or out of focus.
I want to talk more about you as an instructor. Are your students pretty much, are they already in the art world and working on their own careers, or are you teaching basics?
No, I'm not teaching basics. It really was an advanced class, but when someone writes to me, so, I haven't painted in a long time, I'd like to do it, it comes to the heart. If they really have a heart for it and they really want to do it, I'll say, come to the class. My goal is to have someone walk out of the class painting better than they walked into the class. Between painting better and having a love for it is what I'm all about. And it's a very low-key class. I paint with everybody, so because that's what I learned from Tom Buechner was that painted where we painted, and you learn more from watching him. And I think they learned a great deal from watching me. And I get up and walk around every so many minutes. Every time I feel relaxed and really enjoy what I'm doing, I say to myself, it's time to get up and walk around again to talk to everybody.
And what are you instructing people then? What seems to be missing in the people that are maybe not beginning, but in their intermediate parts of their careers?
People the students that I have tend to paint what they think something is. Like, that's an apple, but I want you to paint that apple, the personality of that apple. With the figurative work we just did, it's like one of my students who I love and adore, and she's great. We were painting this breast, and it wasn't her breast. It wasn't the model's breast. It was somebody else's breast or her thought of a breast. I said, I want you to see, paint that breast, or that little dimple on the face, so it's like really to capture who they are and the essence of what they are. I mean, to me, it's like whatever I paint, I try to grab that out. And I paint what, I think an apple looks like. We all can draw an apple and put a stem on it and a leaf, and we call it an apple.
So you're trying to get people to look closely at something instead of just
I love
going,
nuance.
I know what an apple looks like.
Yeah. I love nuance. I just love nuance. And everything in life, I love nuance. And when I paint, I try to get the nuance in there as well without carrying it so far that it's hyper-real.
Oh, I think you're doing a magnificent job with
Thank
your
you.
Work, I
Thank
must
you.
Say. Thank now, you. Last time I talked to you was about 8 years ago. Has your work life, has your vision, has anything changed?
My hair is much, much thinner.
Yes, and that's part of your art, right?
Yes.
You have to have the right image.
Yes.
Has anything changed or evolved in regard to how you approach it?
I take it, I think, even more and more serious than I always, I mean, I'm not a kid anymore. When you're a kid, just like, okay, you expect yourself to get better, you expect to improve. And then if you've been a seasoned artist, you know, I still want to see growth. And I'm always trying to see growth in my work. I'm always comparing a piece I did 2 weeks ago or a year ago to the work I'm doing now. And what excites me is to see that I'm growing and that a little more story being told. And I like to have people look. Sometimes I have Penny come into my studio and she is so sweetly rips my paintings to pieces saying,
really?
I think it's painted really, really well, but, you know, I don't think anybody will buy it.
But that isn't the main point, is
no,
it?
No, it's not at all.
And I
paint, you know, if I paint it for what people want, that's commissions. Of course I do that. But when I'm painting for my own choices, it's all about what I'm feeling and what was that little spark that got me started to do that particular object.
You know, real fast, I want to ask you this. How do you think social media has changed the whole realm of art in good and bad ways?
Well, the good way is I have, especially on Facebook, and Instagram, I have friends all over the globe. I mean, from Australia to Taiwan to India to Iraq. I mean, everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And you see artists that you really appreciate. And there's a few artists I find that I really, really enjoy their work. So it's a great way of seeing other people's work. It's seeing, you can see their techniques. You know, before you go to a book and the book, you know, was published 5 to 10 years later after the work was done, you see it done, you know, immediately. And I do the same thing. I post everything I do. One is because I enjoy getting the feedback. I mean, I'm a human being. But the other side is I want to say, you know, look, give me some feedback. What do you think? What are you seeing?
And it makes it a small community in some ways.
Yeah, and yeah, it's global. I mean, it's so global. And my favorite.
But it's intimate now.
Yeah. My favorite is this little guy. I don't know. I mean, he's little. His name is Remy. He lives in Nigeria. And he wrote to me. And he said, I want to be able to take your class. I said, well, I'm in New York. I want to come to New York. I said, I can't help you do that. He says, can I call you? So he called me on Facebook. And sweet guy, very polite, very, very religious, just the warmest guy. He's in his 20s. And I said, well, you know, show me your work. I'll do whatever I can. And so I sent him a book that I did. I sent him some cards that I did. And he published them on Facebook. He was so delighted. And so we've been friends for like 5 or 6 years now.
Oh, God, that's so great, the way it's bringing people together. Well, Mark Ribbon, we're almost out of time. Can you give some contact information, any place real quick where your stuff can be seen?
Well, coming up on the 27th of September, Gallery 421, which is 421 West Church Street in Elmira, there'll be 30 paintings, there'll be doodles, there'll be drawings, there'll be wine, there'll be music, and hopefully Tish. We're also available at markrubinpainter.com. It's a brand new site. We just put it up. It's been in construction for a year. It shows my paintings as well as my doodles. And doodles can actually be bought online. They come in various sizes, 6x6, 11x11, 24x24, framed or unframed. So that's a new thing for us, a new adventure for us as well. Thank you for asking.
Well, Mark Rubin, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a great pleasure to see you again.
It's always a joy to see you, and thanks so much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.